You're listening to Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. I have on the line Ken Rudin from Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Of course, you can hear that on Aspen Public Radio Fridays at 6 and Sundays at 7. Ken, it is such a pleasure to have you here on Election Day. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Allison. Election Day is my favorite day of the year, which will come as a shock to nobody.
It's the big game.
It is. It is. And you know something, I know it's a midterm election. It's not the big kahuna, which is the presidential race. But I've been covering politics for a long, long time. I have never seen such interest and excitement and enthusiasm and some dread as well as this midterm election.
What are some of the things you're going to be looking at on the large scale? Are you going to be watching that voter turnout number?
Well, yes. I mean, we've already seen record early voting. And, of course, there are a lot of people who, there are a lot of groups that are not in favor of early voting. There are a lot of groups that try to discourage huge turnouts. And that's another conversation completely. But even more so, I mean, look, the turnout is important. We obviously want to see as large a turnout as possible. There are some estimates that it may be as large as a presidential year like 2016. That would be unprecedented. It would be remarkable. But, of course, the big story is, which may be even a predictable answer, is that, you know, there's a battle for the Senate, there's a battle for the House, and there's also a battle for the number of gubernatorial seats that are up. And, you know, both parties have tremendous, they have a lot at stake, and so does the President of the United States, because in some ways the next 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency couldn't be affected what happened tonight.
Absolutely. So what's the, is everyone's goal just to get the most of their candidates in office? Because I also see this turnout where if the next 2 years are what's playing into the next presidential election and Dems flip the House tonight, they get to be the blame and the scapegoat for 2 years if nothing happens because of that.
Well, there's a lot of ifs in that question, but the fact is we do see historical precedent for that. I mean, of course, in 1994, Bill Clinton was in the White House for 2 years. He was on the ropes. His health care plans were going nowhere. A lot of his initiatives were going nowhere. His gun control legislation turned out to be very, very unpopular. And the Republicans won the House for the first time in 40 years and took control of the Senate as well. But Bill Clinton was able to use what the Republicans accomplished in 1994, specifically the overreach that Newt Gingrich and company did when they took over the House and of course, the Senate as well. And he used it to his advantage to win re-election in 1996. So this probably goes under the heading, be careful what you wish for, because as much as the Democrats want to win the control of the House and put Nancy Pelosi or some other Democrat back in the Speaker's chair, and of course the Democrats would love control of the Senate as well, we've seen presidents like Bill Clinton, like other presidents as well, who have run against an opposition Congress to help them win re-election 2 years hence. And, of course, Republicans and Donald Trump are thinking the same thing.
It's so interesting, and it's so good to keep history in context. I guess that feels older than it really was, but that this has happened before. We're not in a new era, really. We've seen almost every situation come up before, even though this...
Nope. I'm interrupting you, and I'll tell you why that's not the case. We have seen historical things like that where a president would use, run against Congress and get elected. Harry Truman, of course, did it in 1948. But we've never seen a president there have been controversial presidents before, and that goes for Democrats and Republicans. But this, and of course, midterm elections are always a referendum, almost always a referendum on the guy or the gal, but so far the guy, in the White House. But having said that, this just feels different. I think maybe it's good because the rallies and the rhetoric have been so toxic and so nasty and so divisive in the weeks leading up to the election that, yes, we've seen controversy before. Yes, we've seen contested elections before. This is the nastiest I could ever remember a midterm election.
And for that reason, this election does feel different to you then, right? You actually have a desired outcome?
Say that one more time.
So this election feels different to you, and it sounds like for the first time you're not just kind of watching on the sidelines. You have a favorite team, or you have an outcome that you're hoping for?
Oh, absolutely not. No, and not, okay. I think if I'm hoping for anything, I'm hoping that people are not turned away from the polls because of the color of their skin. I'm hoping that Russia or some outside entity does not decide this election. And I'm hoping everybody gets to vote, Democrat, Republican, third party, write-in, whatever. I want a huge turnout. I never root for a side, but I do wish that the ugliness and the divisiveness of a certain kind of rhetoric could get toned down. But, you know, I also want a pony, and I haven't gotten that for Christmas yet either. So
I feel like you have a pony in the repertoire somewhere, Ken.
I do. It's called campaign buttons.
That's true. So what are some of the things we'll learn depending on how, and of course, this is so speculative, we don't know how some of the big races are going to turn out, but depending on how the Georgia governor's race goes, depending on if Congress flips, what are we going to learn about the voters tonight?
Well, you know something, that's a very good question, because we have seen, as far as whether it changes the country in one way or the other, we overstate the importance of these midterm elections. As important as they are, we sometimes write messages into them that may not exist. And let me just give you a few examples. For example, in 1972, Richard Nixon won 49 states, and everybody said, wow, this is going to be Republican rule forever. And then 2 years later came Watergate, and the Democrats picked up 43 seats in the House, and it was the beginning of the end of the Republican Party. In 1992, Bill Clinton won the White House with the votes of women and blacks and Latinos and young people and people like that. And people said, well, this is a new era in this country with the Democrats taking over. And then 2 years later, lo and behold, it was Newt Gingrich and the contract with America, and the Republican ascendancy began. So there's a lot of things I'm going to look for. A lot of things I'm going to see whether you know there are some Democrats who are running specifically against Donald Trump. There are some Democrats who say, no, the issue is not Donald Trump. That would be a mistake for us. We should focus on health care. There are a lot of individual races, and we have to remember that this is not a national election. These are 435 individual races in the House, 35 races in the Senate, and 36 gubernatorial races. So everything is different. The candidates are different. But ultimately, at the end of the day, unless there is a lot of recounts going on, ultimately, at the end of the day, there will be a message being sent by the voters. And that's what I'm going to be most interested in seeing. Is it going to be a referendum? Is it going to be rebuttal on President Trump? Is it going to be a push, like, just if the Democrats win the House and the Republicans gain in the Senate, what's the message there? So there's a lot of analysis that's going to go on afterwards. But right now, tonight, I'm just going to be excited about as the numbers come in.
You spoke about the gubernatorial races. Of course, Colorado is one of those. We have more money in our governor's race than ever before, to the extent that we also have a state amendment on the ballot that would change our constitution as far as who can spend money in elections when. What are you seeing as far as the money going into this election cycle?
Well, you know something, I think every 2 years we say that this is the most money ever spent, and that is the case, but it's more and more, especially in the aftermath of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, there seems to be little, if any, restrictions on the amount of money being spent. Democrats are finally catching up to the Republicans. The Republicans learn how big money can win. You know, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, will always talk about money equals free speech. And I think Democrats ignore that at their peril. So a lot of money is coming in, and you see it. And in Colorado, which is still has the reputation of a good government state, there's still not indications of voter intimidation that you see in other states. It still seems like people who want to vote do vote, and the turnout is very large. But again, money will make a difference. You have a lot of money being spent in the gubernatorial race, as we said before. We're watching certainly Mike Kaufman in the 6th Congressional District, where the Republicans have spent a ton of money in the past. Although there's some indication that some Republicans say, well, maybe this time his luck may have run out. But there are so many, whether the money is being spent or is record amounts or not, the fact is that Colorado, even with its just handful of congressional districts, could be very significant in the battle tonight for the control of the House.
if money can sway elections, does that mean that the electorate is just not that informed? Like, really, if you can buy more flyers and say more things to people, you win? Is that what that means?
Well, that's a fair question, but I mean, why do we buy Ivory soap? Why do we buy Honda automobiles? I mean, advertising does work. It does convince us. I don't think we're not intelligent, but sometimes, you know, commercials, look, there are geniuses here, and we can go back to the I Like I commercials of 1952, where what people see on television it makes a big difference. And so I wouldn't discredit the intelligence of the voters, but I will credit the people who put these ads on, because they can be very effective. But having said that, I always think of 2012, when basically Barack Obama and Mitt Romney had the same amount of money at their disposal. Mitt Romney spent most of it, a lot of it, on national television commercials, which, you know, sometimes, you know, it could be intimidating, not intimidating, but just oversaturated because of the amount of commercials, whereas Obama spent a lot of money on get out the vote efforts and going door to door and grassroots efforts. So money does make a big difference, and we've seen it in a lot of elections, but it doesn't always decide, you know, who wins and who loses. Basically, it depends on how well you spend the money. And of course, Hillary Clinton did outspend Donald Trump in 2016. And yes, she did get more votes, but the last I checked, she's not president. So money is important. It probably shouldn't be underrated, but at the same time, it's not, you know, the deciding factor each and every time.
Well, one other thing that we say every single year, you brought up on your show this week, is that it's the year of the woman, and we probably are right every year. There's more and more female candidates. So they are running. Are they being supported, though? They're not fundraising as much as their male counterparts. What are we going to see with the women candidates tonight?
Female candidates have always had the problem of not having the same access to money as men. That seems to have changed a little bit this year. There's more women have run for congressional races than ever before. More of them are going to be on the ballot in November for the Senate, for governor. They could be, you know, I think there's 12 additional women running for governor this year. There were six or seven races in the Senate where both major party candidates are women, and that's an all-time record. And as I said, you're having the record number of women running for the House as well. You're not going to get results that will make women, you know, the winners commensurate with their percentage of the population. And every time I talk to experts on female voting, they roll their eyes at Year of the Women, because, one, they say, why should it be a Year of the Woman? It should be constant. And two, you know, one of these days we're going to stop talking about this being a record year for women, and it's going to be just, you know, like, you know, when we stop counting other things, it becomes part of the norm. Mm. But the fact is, this looks like a great year for women. And of course, if you know, if you get a woman elected governor of Michigan, for example, in Arizona, both candidates for the Senate, for the Jeff Flake Senate seat, are women. There are more and more female candidates running. And I also noticed in the Colorado State Senate, in the battle for the state Senate, which the Republicans hold by only one seat, in all those key races that could determine which party controls the Senate, I think in those five key state Senate races, all five Democratic candidates are women. So you know, sure, you want to call it the Year of the Woman, yes, but it's more important than that. It's a thing of equality, and we saw it building the day after the inauguration on January 21st, 2017.
Ken Rudin, it's an absolute pleasure to be speaking to you on Election Day, no less. Thank you so much for your time.
Allison, I always love talking to you. Thank you so much.
Ken Rudin's Political Junkie plays on Aspen Public Radio Fridays at 6 and Sundays at 7.